Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglund from the Offices of Rational Exuberance here in the heart of the historic core of downtown Los Angeles, in the middle of the Eastern Columbia building that is the Offices of Rational Exuberance in the southernmost part of the historic core. We went over that. This is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, and I am here with my co-host, Mr. Phil Larness, ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Haglund, you are out of practice because we are indeed coming from the Offices of Rational Exuberance and not from the Annex Gallery.
No longer the Annex Gallery, because there's another show in there.
Not Dean Haglund's show.
Not Dean Haglund's show. Dean Haglund's
show. So how was that experience? You wrapped up the show last week.
Wrapped up the show. Lots of offers on paintings. Yeah, I'm getting my Dean Haglund side up to show all the artwork that was at the gallery. That's going to be functional. DeanHaglund.com will be fully functional again, finally, once I get that up. And it was great. It was a great experience. Lots of great feedback. And onwards and upwards.
I may have actually told this story at some point, but it sounds like a stupid joke and a dated joke, but only because that's really what my life sounds like. When I was in college,
yeah.
Just came to L.A., one of the things that they had here was the L.A. Weekly.
Yes, remember that?
The L.A. Weekly. Still have it.
Still
actually.
Have it,
yeah,
yes.
In fact, they contacted us today.
Right. So it's not like they had it.
But, you know, I grew up in the suburbs, and you're, of course, from a rural Canada where it's blistery cold.
Absolutely.
And these places don't tend to have the free entertainment weeklies.
They do not.
The free
urban
independent thinking
urban
political
that you grab off a newsstand
journals,
and there's
yeah.
there's yes, radical thought and cartoons.
So,
yeah.
So many classifieds in them.
Yes.
Which for a college kid was really interesting. You're on a budget, you know, all this sort of stuff. And I really don't want to get into it except that it just made me think of this. But what I actually thought it meant when I read an ad for a fully functional TV, I actually thought, oh, that's not a bad price for a television. And it turns out fully functional TV had nothing to do with a television whatsoever.
What did it have to do with?
Onward and upward, more or less, as you just said. Yeah, it turns out it's short for transvestite.
So you thought you were going to buy a
fully functional TV.
Wow, that's great.
It was like $50.
Wow, I could
for a fully functional, because my remote is busted.
I can get all the channels and cable.
I mean, doesn't it sound like just some stupid old dated joke that like it's like that would be if I was a frozen stand-up comic who came back 20 years later, I would get up and I would do that material. Only sadly, not a joke.
That's what my art show brought to you. That's the whole 2 months of.
Oh no! When you said DeanHaglund.com fully functional, that's what made me think of that.
Oh, I see.
And onward and upwards, actually. And what's next? What's the next stop for the artwork other than the cyber world?
The cyber world. We go to September 10th. We'll be in San Francisco at a gallery on Van Ness. We'll keep everybody posted on that. And then October 8th, we'll be opening at the Vanover Gallery in Springville, New York. So we're going around the nation.
So from Dragon Con to San Francisco.
Yeah, from like the next week.
How long are you going to be up there for it?
Probably 3 days, because we're also doing, it's a group show with two other stand-ups, and it's going to be comics who do paintings. And then there's a lounge upstairs that we'll do stand-up.
People love our production meetings on the air.
Yes.
And wouldn't that be a fun
Live podcast up in San Francisco from the gallery in between the show and the opening, September 10th.
With the other comic.
Look at that.
Oh, my goodness. It would be so great.
We already have the show.
So, yeah, so a lot going on with your artwork now. It was a big weekend here. Everyone in the world seems to know it. You know, we of course did a live podcast on Judgment Day night.
Yes,
of course.
Remember that
from the Retro Dome.
For those
of you who forget, there was Judgment Day.
Rapture
and,
was coming
3 months from now. I guess is the rapture from that date when you know.
Right.
Or is it the other way around? That was the rapture, and then everyone ascended, and then 3 months later is Judgment Day for the rest of us because we didn't ascend.
We didn't ascend, so we're waiting for October.
Nor did, sadly, the people who predicted it.
Well, but, you know, that could be
That means they're sticking it out for
they're
judgment.
They're sticking it
out for judgment. They didn't ascend. They're not at one with the mansion whose presence it is all of our destiny to someday atone.
That was lovely.
So this, even more terrifying in the annals of history than Judgment Day or the Rapture.
Are you speaking of Carmageddon?
I'm speaking of Carmageddon.
The Carpocalypse.
One of my favorite things that any of your friends on Facebook wrote was, spoiler alert, Bruce Willis dies at the end of Carmageddon. I thought that was cute.
That's cute. But I wasn't here for it.
Got the hell out of Dodge.
I got on a plane and avoided Carmageddon altogether.
Now, if there is anyone anywhere who doesn't know to what I am referring, and I can't imagine there is, because quite frankly, the internet was abuzz over it, but so too were people seeing news about Carmageddon everywhere.
And they were paying celebrities to tweet about it.
The fact that people all over the world were sending concerned messages about Carmageddon made me just so ashamed of the city in which I live.
I know.
It's not like Katrina.
No.
Shut down
5 miles?
A 5 mile stretch of a freeway.
On a weekend when everybody should have been sitting at home.
Grab the kids. Lock the doors. Run for your lives. It's Carmageddon.
It's doom. We're doomed.
And of course, it turned out to be Car 2K, as somebody pointed out. Really.
Hilarious.
Because traffic was never better.
Never better, apparently. Lots of free metro transit. Lots of people took the transit, I heard. And you know what? It just goes to prove my point. The reason the freeways are packed, people are just driving around for no reason. I don't think anybody really
has to go anywhere.
We're just like, oh, maybe I'll go to that party or go to that, you know, just sort of as one would casually maybe watch TV or read a book. You hop in your car and you go.
I don't know. Maybe walk somewhere in your neighborhood.
Like you would if you were in a normal city. Exactly.
Now you, on the other hand, got the hell out of Dodge.
I did.
You were traveling. Where were you? St. Louis?
St. Louis, Missouri for the annual American Veterinary Medical Association's annual convention to over 30,000 veterinarians from around North America and the world. The French Ministry of Agriculture was there.
We need to support our veterinarians.
We do.
Because they lay their lives on the line for our country. And
no, you're thinking the wrong vets. These are animal doctors that deal with
any animal that can study that long, go through school for so many years to become a doctor.
No. These are people who treat animals.
This is kind of a cute little like Rowan and Martin thing. Welcome to Laugh-In 2011. It's a great show.
It is.
You did some of the improv comedy that the kids love?
The kids love it. I actually I had to do scripted, reading the teleprompter and doing their morning session is generally very dull, which is where there's information and a guest speaker. This year was Philippe Cousteau, the grandfather of Jacques Cousteau.
You mean the grandson?
Grandson, yes. Because grandfather would be.
Jesus. He would be. I want to meet the vet that kept him alive, as long with all that horse tranquilizer.
No, you're right, the grandson. Lovely guy, and he was the keynote speaker that morning. But in order to make it more lively, they brought in myself to give like a fake talk show where all this information could be put out in a fun way. And then I did comedy. That night I was supposed to open it.
Did you ask Philippe Cousteau why his grandfather was one of the people behind the plot to try to eradicate 90% of the world's population? As we learn in the documentary, The Truth Is Out There.
I did not go into that.
Okay.
He seemed more concerned about water conservation.
Ah.
Which is also in our documentary.
One of our conspiracies.
Exactly. So he was quite fascinating and a joy to talk to.
Now, speaking of The Truth Is Out There, of which we are speaking,
yes.
Did you bring any of the DVDs and sell them?
I did not, because there was no opportunity to do that.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
It was very tightly
controlled.
All right,
Lyle, I just want you to know. Our producer listening at home going, drops, Haglund!
No. See, there's a convention that I'm not. It's
but you, you know, always what you do is you
try
you
to
flaunt the conventions, you flout the conventions, whatever that is. You are not conventional in any way, is what I'm trying to say.
I do. I flaunt conventions.
We're recording this way too late in the day. I'm not on top of the interesting word usements I structure.
So normally that's a morning thing for you as opposed to an afternoon thing.
Oh, my God. I take all the ginkgo biloba all weekend long, get rested, and then I'm good for a couple hours.
And then it's all...
And I seem eloquent, and then the rest of the week, not so much so.
So this is how it's going for your Hollywood Minute on the British radio series?
Oh, I haven't talked about that.
You have not talked about it.
I've become more than just a Hollywood correspondent. I actually, while I was traveling the East Coast, I became kind of an American cultural observer.
Wow.
For Southside Broadcasting there in the UK.
Wow, look at you. So you're sort of Jack Kerouac on the road.
I was a little bit, yeah. I talked about 4th of July, Independence Day. They love also playing TV theme song trivia with me. That's a fun thing they like to do. Yeah.
So what, they'll play obscure TV theme songs and you know them?
Sci-fi related theme songs. Yeah, and I do very well, actually.
Yeah, you do?
There's always a different panel in studio.
Yes.
But the host, Alex, with whom I have great rapport. The kind of rapport I used to have with you.
Till we hated each other.
So, anyway, and I do that. And, well, I'll post a little. From time to time, I post links, of course, about this on the Chilpack Hollywood page.
And, well, I should look at that
page.
We'll
do that. But it's good fun reaching our friends across the pond.
Absolutely. And do you sell DVDs over there?
But I'm here. But they have been great promoting The Truth Is Out There.
See, that's exactly.
They have really been spreading the word.
Fantastic.
I had a very kind of interesting day. I wasn't even thinking that anything of this would become part
chatter.
Of our discussion. But even as we are leading up to the Los Angeles premiere of The Truth Is Out There.
This Wednesday.
This Wednesday and Thursday, Downtown Independent.
So exciting.
You can find out all the details at truth-is-out-there.com.
Right.
Even as we proceed in the hours leading up to the big triumphant Los Angeles premiere, I'm meeting tonight about perhaps the next film from Rational Experiments, a narrative feature that we've talked about before called Night Falls Fast. And I just thought that it was so interesting that my Monday began in the federal courthouse here in Los Angeles.
What?
Where I dropped in on District Court 9.
As one does.
Just to say hi to an old friend of mine who was in town representing himself. He's not a lawyer. He's representing himself. How odd that I'm in a federal courthouse in the morning to say hi to someone representing themselves.
I would say.
Tonight, going to go have cocktails with a lawyer.
Wait a second.
Doesn't it just seem like I got it backwards?
You do got it backwards.
Don't you go to courts to see lawyers and then you have cocktails with friends?
And
no,
I thought,
my life is entirely backwards.
Backwards. But isn't it the other thing that anyone who has himself for a lawyer has a fool for a lawyer?
I guess, except, you know, the Supreme Court issued a pro per ruling that really is kind of interesting and sort of, at least as I understand it, kind of gives one hope for the individual anyway who's trying to fight for their rights, in that the ruling that was handed down, the opinion that was issued, was that courts and judges need to go beyond the written rules of law in terms of submitting papers, documents, all of these sort of things.
Right.
And if someone is pro per, if they are representing themselves, the judge and the court, it's incumbent upon them to find a way to make the law work for them.
Wow. That's
because
good.
You cannot hold their lack of legal training against them.
Right. Yeah, so all the paperwork and all the bureaucratic.
And sometimes if what you want is maybe to seek some sort of truth.
Mm-hmm. And or justice.
Maybe that is the way to do it.
Yeah, interesting.
More plain talk. I don't know. But it was certainly interesting. Mm. And I can't actually talk about it now. But, you know, where Phil Learness goes, drama seems to follow. And yeah. I went in. I was just stopping by to say hi to a friend.
Yes.
And I wasn't even going to say hi to him because I was a little late.
Were
already in session. No, I went to the court. I was going to meet him outside the building and just say hi. Trains got delayed today, and a train broke down on the red line.
So I
texted him saying, you know, I'm running behind. He said, well, I'll go in, come into court 9 and say hi. You know, visitors can go in and observe what's going on. You got to go through the metal detector and all these sort of things. But I noticed that it hadn't started yet, so I felt fine coming in. And I was as inobtrusive as I am capable of being. I was humble. I was very reserved. I was very quiet. And I come in. I wasn't even going to go and say hi to my friend. You know, I was going to follow his lead. I didn't even know he was representing himself. I thought he'd be surrounded by lawyers.
Right.
I thought, you know, I'm just going to go in. I'm going to find a seat in back. And if he seeks me out with his eyes and says hi, well, then I'll do
it. Oh, yeah, right.
Otherwise, I'm not going to do it. So I start to come in. He looks up, waves. So I go over. I shake hands with him. And then I just quietly go to find a seat. And here's how inobtrusive I was. I picked the seat that I did. I was going to find the far corner, but I go, oh, no, I'd have to go past two people. Oh, if I sit here in the back row in the center, I only have to bother one nice-looking lady, and I'll just slip in there and sit mine. So I'm sitting right behind opposing counsel, not knowing this.
Oh, no.
And an incident occurred.
Hot coffee.
Suffice it to say, one of the most powerful, maybe the most powerful attorney in the Western United States, and I had a little bit of a run-in that will be ongoing, and that he is rightly very, very, very concerned about, very scared of. So that's all I'll say.
Wait, he is rightly concerned about the run-in you two had during this case?
I don't want to speak any more about that other than to say that someone, I guess, as someone said later, even when I don't mean to be, I can look fairly intimidating.
Yes. It's the new glasses.
So, yeah. My favorite line is that was said at any point.
Okay.
How do I know he's not a hitman?
I ask that every day.
Anyway, so it was really quite interesting.
That is fantastic.
My photo.
Yeah,
he may have taken my photo in the courtroom
from a camera phone.
No, from a camera phone. By the way, that's a federal offense. You can't take pictures in a federal courtroom. You'd think one of the top lawyers in the business would know such a thing.
But he was in a panic from you looking like a hitman, for crying out loud. His life was in danger.
So I've said too much.
Wow. I want to continue hearing this story as it develops. I think we have now turned Chilpack Hollywood into a procedural courtroom drama that will carry on chapter after chapter.
So,
you're wacky.
It was really, I pulled almost an all-nighter last night taking care of work, and this was sort of the thing to put a spring in your step going, that is the weirdest thing. How did that find me? Why did that find me? What is that mirroring for me? And I mean, you know what I got to say, the guards at the federal courthouse really, really nice. I don't know if nice is the right word because it's not like they're hey, they're everybody's friend. But I mean, just really
professional and cordial.
Really professional, cordial. They listen to you. Because I was there to say hi to a friend.
Right. Yeah. Not to be a hitman.
Certainly not to have my privacy endangered and invaded. Yeah. So
wow.
Boy, we had so much. We promised to talk about so many movies. But there's one other thing. We do tell people, the listeners of the show, that it is your Chilpack Hollywood.
We mean that.
And no matter how you listen to it, whether you listen to us on Jackalope Radio.
Love them.
Whether you listen to us on The Cockroach, the Talk Superstation.
Talk Superstation.
Or find us chillpackhollywood.com, chillpackhollywood.com, where you can download and stream many episodes we've done and even subscribe via iTunes. No matter how you listen to this show, it is your Chillpack Hollywood Hour. We invite you to write us at chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com, chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. And to become a liker on facebook.com/chillpackhollywood. And interact with us, because we love hearing from you and talking about the things that you want us to talk about.
Right.
The thing that occurs to me that we need to talk about is what you just put under your laptop computer.
Yes. Oh,
our former sponsor.
Yes.
And our namesake still to this day. The Chill Pack.
We got the business cards and the bookmarks already made, so We can't
And I like the idea. For those people who've joined us recently.
Recently.
And who haven't seen The Truth Is Out There. ChillPack is something that Dean Haglund invented. The brief story is that it was a simple, environmentally friendly, easy to use, effective, and incredibly affordable solution to the very complex problem of heat on your laptop computer.
Right.
A problem of performance, a problem of longevity, an environmental problem, and as we've learned through some lawsuits that have been waged, actually a health issue as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Heat on your laptop computer.
Right.
And ChillPack solved this problem for you in an environmentally friendly, easy to use, and affordable way. ChillPack is no more.
Right.
People have been writing, letting us know, hey, the ChillPack site isn't working.
Exactly.
Because they can't order it. And so they come through the show trying to order some. And so I thought maybe it would be time for you to address again why they can't.
Because it's gone into bankruptcy is the actual word, and dissolved completely. So there is no more inventory, except maybe one of our resellers might have a few left. But other than that, it is gone as a company altogether. Geek Chic has folded, and now lawyers...
ChillPack will never be forgotten, however, which is why I want to keep the name ChillPack as ChillPack Hollywood Hour. And I like the idea of doing, as we've talked about before, a sequel to The Truth Is Out There. A couple sequels, actually.
Sure, we got
one enough. Of which is called The Truth Is Out There, Business as Usual, and a whole film about things like the ChillPack that people... individuals came up with through their own ingenuity to solve a problem that they themselves had experienced.
Right.
Items that could help people, could maybe alter your life by making it easier, by making life a little less expensive, by making it a little more fun. Whatever it is, these kind of things that could really help people and change the way people live, if only... the people who made them had a huge marketing budget that seems to be required to let people know about such a thing.
That's true. And also some of the groundswell. I was looking just, in fact, as one does online, and there's a huge history of inventions, inventors, entrepreneurs. Tucker being an excellent example, the movie with Jeff Bridges about the Tucker automobile that right. was – so advanced, first car to have seat belts, windshield that popped out. It was one of the safest cars after
right.
all of that. He made 51 of them, sold like all 49 are still on the road today.
I like how you said he made 51 of them, all 49 are still on the road.
Well, two
were. Now, could math problems have been one of the reasons for the bankruptcy?
Very, very much so, yes, math. Okay, you. How about the guy who invented the intermittent wiper? That's that movie just came out recently, where then Ford took that patent and stole it, and he had to fight.
Financial realities are you know, sometimes create a bottom line that isn't the bottom line that reasonable people might actually see as the bottom line.
Right.
People liked this invention. People bought this invention. The truth was that it was never going to be because of the way that the economy was set up, and especially the economy of computers and computer
and consumer products. Yeah.
It was never going to be something that could be a hugely marketed item and therefore a hugely successful item.
Right.
And at some point, the decision had to be made of how long do you keep pushing the boulder up the hill, especially when you're carrying, for anything like this, a fairly big cash outlay in research and development at
Absolutely.
The beginning.
Yeah, and then you have to hold that debt and carry that debt through as your retail
sales. There
are
so many successful businesses where people don't realize, you know, sports example.
Yeah.
The San Francisco Giants won the World Series last year. They've sold out every single game that they have this year. They are fairly flush with cash. However, they have to be careful in terms of how they spend because they have the most beautiful ballpark in all of baseball and all of sports, and they are servicing the debt on that ballpark.
On that ballpark.
So although they're flush with cash right now, no problem paying off that debt right now.
Right now.
How much do you spend and how much do you keep away? Because what happens if the team
sucks like the Dodgers and then suddenly nobody goes?
Boy, suddenly,
and then all of a sudden you're in a whole nother ball game.
So servicing debt, boy, what a topic that is.
That is
everywhere.
Bigger, yeah.
In every walk of life, that seems to be the topic.
Yeah, absolutely. And as the economy, you know, went haywire in 2008, online retail sales plummeted, and that then put a lot of pressure on debt financing. So,
is there anything that you would want to let people know about the Chill Pack, about its past, about its future, anything?
Well, there's a hope that there is a couple.
Would you
of
like
guys
to let them know that a couple weeks after you bankrupted it and disassembled everything, that the government called to place a huge order?
Yes, isn't that always the way? But yeah, about 3 weeks after everything else, all inventory was liquidated, I get a call. Hey, you still got those things? We got an order for about 1,000, maybe. Yeah, hilarious. No, there is a. One of the resellers may be trying to buy the patent. So, and if they get the patent, then they'll be renamed, and the product will work the same, but it'll be under a whole new guise and a whole new ball of wax. So, I think I should let them make that announcement as opposed
right
to me.
But there's, someday
there's hope.
Okay, you know what? Finally, at the midpoint. Let's talk movies.
Yay!
We are in the middle of the summer. Actually, when you consider that the summer movie season now traditionally. Yeah.
The new tradition.
It used to be Memorial Day. Now it's the first Friday in May.
First Friday in May.
This began really with the Mummy movies of more than
yes
a decade ago, and it's carried on really Marvel Studios. Locks down that first Friday of May, kind of announcing with the flag in the sand, this is the first summer release. And this year it was Thor.
Thor, yeah. Big
time. Iron Man, of course, a couple years back.
Right.
And
Wolverine,
so really, when you look at it that way, the summer really begins in May. So we're almost through, we're well more than halfway through the summer because it's by Labor Day. That's
right.
It. By Labor Day,
it's all over.
Kids are back in school. Then adults can start going to the movies again.
Because it's Oscar season.
At least that's the conventional wisdom. Though right in analyzing this summer, it seemed to me that some things are changing.
Really?
You and I advocated for a long time on this show about year-round box office.
Why not?
And now, indeed, that's what we see. You can have huge openings at any time of year. Even January, which used to be a burial ground for shit movies.
Yes.
Because nothing else would be able to find their way in the midst of all these Oscar contenders. No. They're releasing blockbusters in January now.
Isn't that great? Because there's air to breathe and air for the marketing to breathe. I mean, if you jam all your blockbusters
in the summer. It's a year-round business. People love movies year-round. People, you know.
They do not go and hibernate.
So now I think there are certain types of movies that may play better at certain times of year.
Sure.
One of the movies, well, we'll talk about that as we get into this. I wrote down what are the top 14 films thus far
wow
at the summer box office.
Okay.
And I thought maybe we could analyze, you know, what not only the quality of the films, but is there anything to learn from the film itself vis-a-vis the business and what we might expect in the future?
Look at that.
First, number 14, a comedy that has just crossed the $60 million mark after opening on July 8th.
Wow.
Had a very minor drop, only 38% in its second weekend, which is very good.
Yeah.
Especially when in its second weekend it was going up against Harry Potter and week two or whatever of Transformers.
Yeah.
And it's Horrible Bosses.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's 14 right now, and it's going to climb because it's still doing quite well. And
yeah,
we talked about this a little bit last week, that although this film may not have the big laughs of a Hangover 2, or a Bridesmaids, I walked out feeling very good and enjoyed the film all the way through because even though the jokes and the gag lines and the set pieces even
set pieces,
might
yeah
not have been as inventive or as irreverent or whatever as some of those other films, the tone throughout the film
tone
was so pleasing, and the chemistry between, the friendship chemistry between the three leads was so strong.
Same.
And those things are like magic.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the art of filmmaking.
Yeah.
You can construct jokes. You can construct set pieces.
Right. And those can be handed through executives and translated through different departments and stuff like
tone
that.
Tone and chemistry are almost ineffable.
They happen on the set between people. And that's the thing. So there is, you know, breathing techniques and stuff that you can do for your actors to get tone and chemistry, but
and
you're not going to get that on
when
paper.
A director can make a film that has this tone, because it's not just the chemistry between the actors that creates the tone, because as we know, so much can screw that up.
Yes.
The directing.
The editing.
From the camera angles can jar you. The editing, the music, so much tone is so delicate, right?
Yes.
And so this director, Seth Gordon, is to be commended. And I was looking at his track record, because clearly we're going to see him, you know, next
after
film
this
is going to be from the director of Horrible Bosses, right?
Right, right, exactly.
And he made Four Christmases, which was a comedy starring Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon that failed to have any chemistry and failed to have any tone, pleasing tone whatsoever. And you can imagine why a young director on a Vince Vaughn comedy might have had trouble creating tone and working with the chemistry, because you know what? There was a far more dominant personality
right
in the room. There wasn't probably this team effort.
Yeah, right, where people will back down off their ego sort of thing.
Because before that, his film was an indie that I have heard wonderful things about called The King of Kong, Fistful of Quarters.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that, too.
I've heard wonderful things about that film, and I imagine that it's probably delightful, so I look forward to seeing that now.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I think, so this director, Seth Gordon, is certainly a director of comedies to watch.
Look at that.
13.
Number 13.
Mr. Popper's Penguins.
Is that right?
This is what I was thinking of when I talked about how there are certain times of year probably to release a film.
Yeah.
Would you release this in summer?
Because it's going to be a really hot summer. And what better way than the Christmas movie to cool off your brain?
Were they saying, hey, it's winter in half the world?
We'll get really good in foreign. Yeah,
Argentina's going to love it. Because that's where. Oh, Mr. Popper.
That's where penguins are. The penguins are down in Antarctica. It's going to play so well at Ice Station Zebra that they'll just make their money back.
This opened 17 June. Made $61.5 million thus far. I mean, it's dead. I mean, and
how
so too is his paydays, right?
I mean,
Jim Carrey commanding $20-plus million for a comedy when
there's no
Mr. Popper's Penguins is making $61 million.
And they canceled Used Men, him and the Ben Stiller movie. That was a budget was flying around $110 million.
And that was too much.
And it was too much. The studio just pulled the plug and said, here's, you know, your buyout check and thanks for coming. And the movie never got made.
The director of this, by contrast to the up-and-coming director...
Seth Gordon.
Mark S. Waters, who at one point was an up-and-coming director of comedies, especially when he made Mean Girls.
Oh, yeah.
He followed up Mean Girls with the remake of Freaky Friday.
Yes.
Which did decent box office.
And why
not? No one was probably talking about the director coming out of that one. And then Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, or as it was called in the billboards, Matthew McConaughey, and insert name of female lead whose career is about to end here. Clearly not a director with a stamp or much of a personality. And now you go back to Mean Girls, upon which his reputation was based. Oh, yeah, right. Tina Fey wrote and acted.
Yes. And there's a big personality and someone whose personality jumps off the screen. So
and who knows comedy.
And who knows comedy.
And knows how to structure it, knows how to write it, knows how to work in a team ensemble.
Right.
As opposed to maybe, say, Jim Carrey.
Yes, Jim Carrey as a stand-up. I don't think – well, yeah, you're right, because even when he was in Living Color, he wasn't really doing sketch. He was doing crazy characters – that everyone else sort of revolved around.
Right.
So the characters weren't intrinsic to the ensemble of it all. He was the nutty guy coming in for the
and you
splash
know,
laugh.
It's not even going to make the top 14 here, and it's another film that makes me feel a lot like Mr. Popper's Penguins, only the star of it still has quite the career. I don't think he's taking the blame for it. And that's Zookeeper, another big effects-laden family four-quadrant hit we've got on our hands that amounted to nothing in summer season.
Right.
And it's really interesting. It's
Well, you know, I was at the St. Louis Zoo, and I did talk. They had the premiere there at the St. Louis Zoo for Zookeeper.
Right.
And I asked the zookeeper what he thought of the movie Zookeeper. And he said, yeah, well, technically it was inaccurate. That was his, I think, diplomatic way of saying it really sucked. So due to its technical inaccuracies, I recommend.
Now, number 12 at the box office, doing surprisingly well, I thought. And also, based on the reviews and based on what people expected, it's got to be considered a decent hit. And that's Bad Teacher.
Yeah.
Whereas the big family adventure films seem to be underperforming this summer. R-rated comedies are exceeding expectation, each one of them. Because at $88.5 million through today, you've got to say that having opened on June 24th, Bad Teacher exceeded expectations.
I would say.
Did you think that was going to hit $100 million?
No, I was going to stick around 40. I thought.
Director of that, Jake Kasdan, son of Lawrence Kasdan.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Who did Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story.
That was kind of cool.
Which had certainly some joy to it. And also the I hope it's a cult favorite. I don't know if it's a cult favorite, but I hope
it
is, because I liked it, and it was a really cool little movie with a tragically underappreciated leading man, Bill Pullman, The Zero Effect.
Oh, yeah. That was a cult.
That was Jake Kasdan.
That was some time ago, too.
So it'd be interesting if Bad Teacher's success is enough to let maybe Jake Kasdan pick his own project next time and see where he might go with that, because he's got kind of interesting taste.
Right.
Number 11, a film that I think you've seen and maybe even reviewed, opened on the 17th of June. It has made $112.7 million to date, which sounds great.
Right.
Until you realize it plummeted from week one to week two. And when you consider that the production budget, not marketing, was $200 million.
Wow.
The Green Lantern cannot be considered anything other than a colossal disaster.
Well, and, right, I mean, when you have that kind of marketing budget and that kind of budget to begin with, you really got to have everything all in a row. And as my review said, here's your problem. You have every under 30 or 30-year-old male lead already tied to some sort of action comic book. So who do you got left to play your Hal Jordan? For you got no one. You know, when we walked out of the movie, technically all of it was there on paper. It's just that Ryan Reynolds
was miscast.
And there was
Ryan Reynolds can be a very charming actor. He can be a very good actor.
I loved him in The Proposal. Don't kid yourself. He's very funny. He's got it all. But
what was the one? Was it Adventureland with Jesse Eisenberg? Yeah. I thought he was very good in that. In fact, Ryan Reynolds was the one that kind of blew me away, going, whoa, I didn't know he could be this natural.
Yes, right? Yeah.
I knew he could be funny and charming, but I didn't know he could be so natural.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, there was something about him, and then something just about the atrocious billboard campaign that just made me say, this is just too silly.
Yeah.
It's just too silly. This is the sort of movie that makes comic – like I said about how Carmageddon made me feel ashamed to live in L.A. I feel like the billboard campaign for Green Lantern would make comic book lovers ashamed to like comic books.
Yeah. Yeah, they were sort of lame.
You know, it's the relative that you just
– are embarrassed to be seen with. Yeah. My review in comedyfilmnerds.com explained all the issues that I had with it. And normally when I do a review, I try to be constructive. I say, here are your problems. Here's what I would do were I in charge of this production. And these are the fixes. And yet with Green Lantern, I actually stared at it and said, I don't know where I would begin other than try find a male lead. And even there, I'm stuck. Who in our today's society?
And that's interesting, because, you know, the director of it, not a legendary auteur director, a very good director, though, who is, if he has a particular specialty, it's knocking first movies of a series out of a park.
Right.
And I'm talking about Martin Campbell, who directed the first Pierce Brosnan James Bond, GoldenEye,
GoldenEye,
which entirely revived the franchise.
Absolutely.
And then directed the first Daniel Craig Bond, came back to do Casino Royale, which not only revived the franchise, reinvented it, and took it to never-before-seen heights.
Right. Spectacular.
Both financially and artistically.
Yeah.
How about his work with oh my goodness, I can't remember. Antonio Banderas.
Antonio in
Zorro.
Zorro, yes.
So he's made good movies. He's a good choice for someone to really usher these gigantic movies when you have so much writing on them as a first of a series.
And a franchise, too.
So did he? What could he have done differently?
Well, see, that's the thing. It actually was all the script was milked for everything it had. But my problem even is going back to the source material. Green Lantern itself, see, it wasn't my favorite comic book, and it did not sit alone. You know, it sort of felt like the comic book that the writers made after they felt they'd written Batman and Superman too long, that you're stuck in these, you know, tight forms. Why don't we have a superhero that can anything? He can make anything, so there's lots of things you can draw, and he can travel to another planet so he can do space. And, you know, so they sort of created a superhero that went outside the realm for art, for the writer's reasons and the artist's reasons, so that they had freedom. That's what it felt like.
And although DC had the biggies, had the Superman and the Batman,
And all that, yeah.
Am I wrong in saying as a blanket statement that the DC universe was never as interesting as the Marvel universe?
Well, there's your argument that we could have a Comic-Con for hours on end.
Are there really people who argue that the DC universe was more interesting?
Yes. There's panels that go on about that very thing.
About the DC universe being more interesting. Really?
Yes.
Well, I could end those panels fairly quickly by just telling the people in favor of the DC universe that they're wrong.
Well, then, we're going to have a great weekend Saturday down in San Diego.
I thought there were some great heroes, but the intricacy of the universe was maybe never...
Perhaps you never read the giant Infinite Crisis.
I don't know. Was that the one where there were alternate worlds and alternate...
No, that's Bizarro, Batman Bizarro. Is that what you're thinking?
No, it's just crazy stuff. all right. Once they started getting into alternate worlds and alternate universes, that was the time when I realized, you know what? A boy ought to grow up at some point. Number 10, speaking of not growing up.
Yeah.
Number 10, a film that was really being hailed as, hey, this is going to be the surprise blockbuster of the summer. I love when they tell you it's going to be the surprise blockbuster. The surprise is we lied to you about it being a blockbuster. Super 8, which, as I said last week, would better be called a mediocre 6 out of 10.
Hello.
Opened on June 10th, has made $122 million.
Wow.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Especially kind of a vindication for their ad campaign, though, because everybody was saying they were idiots for not showing the monster.
Right.
You know, a monster movie that doesn't show the monster. But, you know, that was kind of the traditional approach. Yeah, Jaws. And with, you know, with
the
Spielberg.
Blob.
And Spielberg produced it, executive produced it. And this is not only a film that is really an homage to Spielberg. It's a movie that was made as if it was made back when he was making movies. It's set in the late 70s, early 80s. And it's made as if it was made in the late 70s, early 80s.
It had all the feel to it.
And on paper, that seems
cool. On screen?
Underwhelming.
Yes.
And disappointing in the sense that it's from director J.J. Abrams.
Right.
And of all people to make that mistake, here's the director of Star Trek
who
breathed brand new life and energy and style and depth into something everyone thought they knew. Remember, the ad campaign was, this is not your father's Star Trek.
Right.
That was the ad campaign.
Yeah.
Here, kids want a blockbuster? This movie is saying, this is your father's blockbuster.
That's hilarious. That's true, right?
One of the things that's really missing, and one of the things, I know you're not the hugest Steven Spielberg fan.
Not the hugest deal.
But among the things that, you know, we can agree about, you've talked about how good he is with a first act.
J.J. Abrams.
Spielberg,
yes.
His use of sound is extraordinary.
Very good.
But you know what? He did do excellent work with children actors.
I give you that.
He found incredibly talented young actors.
Christian Bale.
And did great work with them.
Yes.
These young actors, maybe they're very talented. Great work is not done with them.
Oh.
Great work is not brought out of them.
Ooh.
No favors are done.
Oh.
Anyway, so it's...
is weird because you think, well, you know, kid, all you have to do is sort of let them be natural. I mean...
But there isn't anything natural about, hey, we're going to make a movie as if we were making it.
In 1970.
Yeah, because you know what? You're so in an idea.
Yeah.
You're trapped in a mental exercise at that point.
Right.
So there isn't any room for natural life to flow.
Which is why then probably the acting came across so stilted, because you're stuck in an idea.
So anyway.
Interesting.
Super 8.
Okay.
You know what it reminded me of? Here's an analogy that kind of how lifeless it was of J.J. Abrams being straitjacketed by his attempt to be Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
It's like how often great lead actors seem to want to do a Woody Allen impression
when
in
they're
a Woody
Allen
movie. Which is why Owen Wilson is so refreshing in Midnight in Paris, because he's Owen Wilson.
He's not doing Woody Allen.
No.
But when you think about it, he's always done Woody Allen. That's the thing.
But that, his own
version of it. But it's always been kind of a convention, innocent thing that that vocal mannerism, as soon as you put the two together, it's like, oh my God, he is the, you know.
Now, number 9,
oh, yes.
I didn't see. Did you see X-Men First Class?
I did, actually.
And was it good?
I really
want to see this.
Yes, I did really enjoy it.
Opened June 3rd, has made $143 million. It opened rather weakly, given the franchise. But, you know, when you consider how bad the third one was, and that there weren't any big names in this, and no Wolverine, I think, you know, it was unrealistic to expect a huge opening, and it held fairly strong.
Actually, there is Wolverine in it for one line, and it's hilarious.
And, of
course, it's
director Matthew Vaughn, whose Layer Cake I loved and whose Kick-Ass you loved.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he seemed a good fit for this, and so it's really good.
I really enjoyed it. And, you know, it's the origin story of how X-Men and Magneto and how all of these people came.
Charles Xavier and
Mystique. Like, who knew? Like, I don't remember reading X-Men origin comic books. So if they stuck close to it or not, I can't tell. And the revisionist history of the Cuban Missile Crisis that they based the entire third act around, really cool. And it's like, they're, you know, bringing it in. So it has that element to it that's kind of neat. So it's all 1962. And
that
Bay of Pigs, it's really awesome.
It's X-Men meets 13 Days.
Exactly. So, of course, historically inaccurate to beat the band. But, you know, regardless, it still has that element of global doom and Armageddon that's brought to, you know, a real concrete way.
So it sounds a little bit like what they were going after with what was the big group comic book movie that... the director of 300 did.
Oh,
My God. Yeah, Night Owl and Rorschach.
Yeah. Watchmen.
Watchmen. It sounded like kind of what they were attempting to
do there. Yes.
But Watchmen, that is an alternate universe.
Watchmen's an alternate universe and much more ponderable. This was much more action-driven, but emotionally grounded. Like, to beat the band.
Well, you would hope, because they cast actors that say, hey, this is why we're getting them, is you can expect us to let them ground this emotionally.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why get those actors?
Well, absolutely. And it was really important then to actually have that feed, because so many of these, you know, particularly the third one, it was a painful exercise in... Not even great
sucking
special effects.
Sucking the bones dry to make some money.
Without any, like... Well, I'm not even going to go into it. But the point is...
Well, I can't wait to see that.
First Class is very, very good.
Now, number eight, something neither of us saw, I'm sure, an animated sequel, Kung Fu Panda 2.
Ugh.
Opened on 26th May, has made $160 million,
yep.
versus $215 million of the original, which means much less in terms of attendance and much. And what I gather is it's not bad. I mean, I thought the first one was not bad, but it seems like there was no marketing that made you say, hey, that's something you need to see.
Exactly.
There's something special or unique about it. It's just, here's more.
Here's
of
more.
Something you spent money on before.
Right, and he's going to fight a larger foe and I couldn't really feel the I'm overcoming my inadequacies to find my strength is my weakness.
Yeah,
which is what the message was, a great message.
So I have no idea if it's a failure of the movie or a failure of marketing. It's certainly a failure of marketing. If there is no story in the movie, then you certainly can
or any moral like you know any great Zen philosophy that can be translated through a cartoon. If there is one like that and it didn't come into marketing, then it's totally a failure to get that message out.
Number seven, we've talked about it before, Bridesmaids.
Yes.
Opened on the 13th of May, has made $161 million, directed by Paul Feig.
And it cost how much?
Whose only film prior to that was a movie called Unaccompanied Minors. You remember that thing?
No.
And that's his only film. And it cost, I'm sure, nothing.
Yeah.
And... and the good news is we're going to see more female-driven comedies.
Who knew girls were funny?
You know, I mean, just as long as there are comedies that don't have Sex in the City in the title. And at some point, maybe, you know, these female performers will be allowed to headline comedies, as we've talked about before, that don't involve them showing, hey, women can be just as sophomoric as men.
Yes, and do fart jokes and all that sort of thing.
You know, because it still had such a kind of a masculine perspective
it did.
On it.
Yeah.
And, you know, right down to the disingenuous, hey, you don't need a man to be happy, but oh, by the way, we're going to give you the perfect man.
Yeah, there he is right there. He's the cup.
Turns out you had the wrong man all along. number six, Cars 2.
Wow. That's
opened on 24 June. It's made $165 million, but it's almost done. And that's versus the almost $250 million of the original. So it did a lot less, had a lot smaller attendance. It's the first Pixar movie, period, to get terrible reviews.
Oh.
And did you see the Robot Chicken slam on this?
No.
At the end of the last episode of Robot Chicken?
No, I missed it.
Look at me quoting Robot Chicken to you. Adult Swim.
Hello.
You are a shadowy image upon me. You have turned me into you. I'm debating DC Universe versus Marvel. Please, somebody towel me off. Get me a cold compress.
This is why that lawyer was afraid.
They basically listed at the end, in the end credits of Robot Chicken, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, hey, you know, Toy Story. Magical. Toy Story 2, magical. Toy Story 3, magical. WALL-E, fantastic adventure. Up, one of the greatest films of all time. You know, and list all these great Pixar, Finding Nemo, all these great Pixar films. And then Cars 2 said, leave, basically it was, you know, leave the cynical, cheap cash grabs to us. That's what Adult Swim is for.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty,
pretty,
cool.
pretty slam at the end of it.
That's a slam.
Number five. And oh, by the way, not coincidentally, the news today in response to kind of Cars 2's failure, or at least failure to live up to any of the standards. And of all movies to remake, you know what? Cars is the one Pixar movie I never saw.
I mean,
because who wants to see in our fucking world that's been driven to the point of environmental collapse by a reliance on fossil fuels.
Right.
Who wants to see a movie about
cars
talking, you know?
Yeah. And a stinky tow truck.
But, and then to make a sequel, and we'll do it about one of the supporting characters.
Yeah, exactly. The stinky tow truck.
Just so strange. Yeah. But anyway, Toy Story 4, they're not ruling out. Of course they're not.
Of course not.
Because they sell stock on Wall Street.
They become bigger than themselves.
What happened to the new movies that you guys would make? Like the Ups?
And the Things.
And the Wall-Es.
And the guys where you sit in a room and you all create ideas.
Number five, already for the whole summer.
Uh-oh.
Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
This thing is a juggernaut.
Opened on Friday. Biggest advance sales.
Of course.
Biggest midnight screenings.
I bet.
Biggest opening day, single day, Friday.
Wow.
And opening weekend.
Take that, Avatar.
In history.
There you have it.
It will be number one of the summer. It will be number one of the series. And could very well end up the most attended of the entire series as well. Not only the most successful, but the most attended. I thought we will table the discussion of HP7 because I'm doing something much like I did, what I like to do. I have been rewatching all the films.
Oh, fantastic.
We'll talk about the entire series next week.
Let's do that.
Number four, Thor. Which seemed like it wasn't living up to Marvel standards when the summer began.
Right. So slow start.
But it's number four. Now, it'll get passed, of course, by Harry Potter. We've got a couple more blockbusters still to open. But, wow, that's good.
Good for Thor, yeah.
$180 million.
Mm-hmm.
Sequel has already been announced.
Great.
Directed by Kenneth Branagh, who will not return to the sequel, much like how they won't pay Jon Favreau to do the third Iron Man.
Yeah.
They go after lesser-priced talent.
Right, because now you can surf the marketing on the name of the
brand. The movie definitely has turned Chris Hemsworth into a star.
He's every bit a star.
Now, did you see this?
No.
I think you would enjoy it.
I think I will enjoy it.
And
I'm looking for a week off.
I have heard that some people say, well, when it's Earthbound, it's not quite as good. And I couldn't disagree more. I loved her work, thought she was incredible in Black Swan, deserving of the Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
I was so grateful for Natalie Portman in this film. She has figured out now, and she's still a very young woman.
Yes.
She has figured out now how to allow herself to do less.
Always important.
In a big film like this.
Yeah.
And so there's a naturalness and just an ease and a charm about her that is so important in this film to hold down the on the ground until the action from above comes down.
Right, right.
Anyway, and the other guy that I want to mention about this film, Clark Gregg, an actor who I'm going to say is the contemporary Kevin Spacey.
Wow.
This is the guy who's in all the Marvel movies playing the agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, yes.
Kind of the functionary.
Yeah.
He starred as the ex-husband on the New Adventures of Old Christine for several years.
Yeah.
And much like Kevin Spacey, who got his start in some part due to David Mamet playing Gary Glenn Ross.
But why?
Clark Gregg, one of his first big film roles, was in David Mamet's film Main Street
that
Mamet wrote and directed. Anyway, he is a wonderful actor, a wonderful functionary. I would love to see him actually get a chance to do a lead.
I can't wait.
It would have to be a very unique kind of character.
Yeah.
But he is...
Clark Gregg.
He's really always good.
You have an eye for talent.
Number three. Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides.
Dear Lord.
Opened on the 20th of May. It has made $237 million in this country versus, for example, Pirates 2, which made $423 million.
Right.
The audience in America has been cut in half. Less than half because attendance figures, box office costs have gone up with these high 3D prices.
Right, right.
So it probably only had 30% the attendance of Pirates of the Caribbean 2.
Yeah.
There are two more of these films coming.
Oh, dear Lord.
And why? Well, maybe
overseas.
Because it's made $800 million overseas.
I gotta think.
Each Pirates movie's done better than the one before overseas.
I would imagine that the voiceover actors who do the translations are maybe better. Could that
but
be
still,
it?
But still, it is amazing that these sequels grow overseas.
They do.
And here, where I don't put a lot of faith in our taste, we grow kind of tired of them. Maybe the second one will be the biggest.
Yeah.
Transformers 2, Austin Powers 2,
Austin Powers,
whatever it is.
Yeah. Godfather 2. Bad example.
Whatever. Amazing. Number two at the box office.
Yeah.
The Hangover 2.
Look at that.
AKA
Hangover 1.
On the Way to the Wedding for our listeners in Israel. The series is known as On the Way to the Wedding, they
really?
Stop in Las Vegas. On the Way to the Wedding, they stop in Bangkok.
Oh,
or
fantastic.
Other countries where it's known as The Very Bad Trip. Because the hangover is not a thing.
It's a thing, a euphemism.
A euphemism. So it opened on the 26th of May. It's made $251 million. But here's the thing I was shocked to learn. The original made $278
million. Yeah, it was
huge.
It
made less than the original, and it cost almost three times as much. $80 million to $35
million. I thought they would have saved money going to Thailand. Guess not.
Well, no. And of course, the players now had a bigger deal.
That's right.
The actors, the director all got a much bigger deal. Director Todd Phillips, who is fairly reliable, I must say.
Mm-hmm.
Old school, you know, I enjoy. Starsky and Hutch had laughs.
Yep.
Due Date did very well with
Robert
Downey Jr. His big misstep, though, do you remember this? School for Scoundrels.
Oh, yeah.
That was after some of these big hits.
Ooh.
Starring Billy Bob Thornton and... Where is he now? John Heder, a.k.a. Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah, I just saw Napoleon Dynamite again. That was...
Finally, the number one film until Harry Potter passes it, Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Have you
it
seen?
It opened on 29 June, made $303 million thus far. It'll probably end around $340 million compared to the $402 million of Transformers 2.
Yeah.
You know what? The trailer looked great. I actually wanted to see this Transformers.
Really?
Show, but I could never get through Transformers 2. I tried on a couple of occasions. Couldn't get past 20 minutes.
Couldn't understand it.
It was so bad.
Yeah.
And yet, of course, the most successful of them.
Because you had to watch it over and over again to understand what
but
the hell was going on.
But now people are passing it. Passing this one by a little bit because that second one was so bad.
I am Optimus Prime and hear this message of Earth.
What? And I've heard you kind of need to see the second one to understand the third
no,
one,
No, you
too,
do not. Is that
I've
true?
I've actually heard that.
Oh, my
now,
God.
No, I heard that from a 13-year-old, but still. That's where we're at this
Fantastic.
Point in the summer. We've got several more blockbusters coming up. We've got Marvel's Captain America on Friday, though it's been a rich summer. I mean, there have been several movies that have made this summer truly memorable as a really good summer for movies that maybe we'll talk about next week while we talk about Harry Potter.
Fantastic. Because there's another big blockbuster this Wednesday and Thursday.
The truth is out there. Truth-is-out-there.com.
The Downtown Independent.
But I do love, like we talked about, to put a button on this whole thing.
Yep.
The cinema business is year-round, and it seems like the powers that be understand that. They understand catering to different tastes all year-round. Look at what's coming Friday. You've got Marvel's Captain America. You also have the Sundance favorite, the sci-fi film, Another Earth.
Oh, yeah.
Which looks interesting. A French language mystery called Sarah's Key, starring Kristen Scott Thomas.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
Amazing when she's in French.
Yes.
And then you've got another R-rated comedy, Friends with Benefits. So you've got something for everybody in the middle of the summer. The following Friday, Jon Favreau's Cowboys and Aliens, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
On the same day, you've got Dan Fogelman's Crazy Stupid Love with Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Julianne Moore.
Big laughs.
And Miranda July's indie film. She made Me, You, and Everyone We Know. You've got her film Future. So you've got something for everyone each week, it seems.
Smart marketing.
And that's exciting.
Yeah.
So next week we'll talk about some of the films that made the summer truly memorable, even though they're not on the top 14 at the box office.
Can't wait.
And until then, follow us on Twitter. I'm twitter.com/PhilLarnas.
I'm D. Haglund, and we'll see you next week.